Good morning. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show on WPR News. And we start our show today with a look at fashion. Now, even if you say you're not fashionable, that too is a fashion. It's like saying I'm not going to choose. That too is a choice. And when we talk about fashion, whether or not we know it, we're probably all involved in the growth of fast fashion. Just for example here, McKinsey & Company, a U.S.-based global management consulting firm, in their annual State of the Fashion report for this year, says global apparel consumption is projected to rise 63% by 2030. That'll be about over 100 million tons of clothes annually. And fast fashion consumers are quick to throw them away. Some estimates suggest that consumers treat the lowest-priced garments as just about disposable, getting rid of them after as few as 7 wears. For every 5 garments produced, McKinsey says the equivalent of 3 end up in a landfill or are incinerated each year. And total greenhouse gas emissions from the production of this fast fashion clocks in at 1.2 billion tons a year. And that is, according to McKinsey, more emissions than all international flights and maritime ships combined. So what is the alternative to fast fashion? Have you heard of slow fashion? Dr. Eric Brote is the co-founder of GNU Incorporated. He's also the Associate Dean of Native Health at Oregon Health and Science University School of Medicine in Portland. And Dr. Brote is from Wisconsin. So, what do you want to know about slow fashion? And what do you have to say about where your clothes come from and how conscious you are about it? What are you willing to pay for the clothes you wear and the fashion you have, whether it's fashionable or not? Join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us, talk@wpr.org. And Dr. Eric Brote, welcome to The Larry Mueller Show.
Oh, good morning, Lee. It's a pleasure to be able to join you.
Yeah, I'm really interested in GNU because you hail from Wisconsin, but give us the history of this clothing company.
Well, like you mentioned earlier, both my wife and I are physicians. So I'm a hospitalist in family medicine and also a dean of Native Health here at the medical school in Oregon. And then my wife is a women's pelvic cancer surgeon. And what happened was, as we did the transition from our residency training, which is kind of like you're already a physician, but you have to train in your specialty for a few years, we began to think a lot more about like who we are as people, because we'd gotten engaged, who we wanted to be, but then also thinking a lot about our relatives and our family and listening to stories. And it really started from us like hearing their stories and knowing like what they wore and used and kind of adorned themselves with, within like a structure and function way. And it really got us thinking about buying better things and buying less of them so that we could have things that would literally be with us through time. And it's funny that you bring this up, and some of the stats just kind of triggered my memory a little bit, but the pair of boots I just got out this morning was the very first purchase I made like that.
How long ago was that?
16 years ago. And the second pair is 15 years ago. So I bought one pair of black boots and one pair of brown boots. One pair is from Red Wing in Minnesota. Yep. And they started making the original styles again. And it's the style that one of my great-great or great-great-great grandfathers wore functionally within the railroad so that they didn't get burnt by the coals that were coming out. Right. And so, and the other pair was actually made in New Berlin, Wisconsin by Russell Moccasin Company. And what's amazing is that they have repaired, both of those companies have repaired both of those pair of boots for me. Like you mentioned, something gets thrown out, like three out of 5 garments gets thrown out within the first year or whatever. I have had each of those pairs of boots repaired no fewer than 3 times. And so if anybody's looking for literally one of the best boots that you can buy in America, look no further than Wisconsin in New Berlin. Go up and visit the Russell Moccasin Company. They are amazing.
And amazing. This would be the epitome of slow fashion, right, Dr. Brote? And this is where your company, GNU, fits right in.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what we're trying to do is be more intentional and to create higher quality. And I think that's been the strange thing about being in the fashion ecosystem, because the way people have been able to, frankly, make a lot of money is by exploiting the earth, exploiting people, and then making garments and items that are intentionally supposed to be to break down.
Yeah.
So that it's like an intentional or planned obsolescence. Like, people don't want you to make a coat that you wear for more than one, maybe two seasons. And I think what we are actually doing is run the other end of the spectrum, making things of the highest quality we can find materials of, finding those materials as close to our home as possible, and then working with the best local partners we can find so that people can wear our garments for decades. And, you know, people are like, well, how do you even know that? Because we've been around only for 10 years, for like 15 years, but then making products for 13 that are apparel, that are like rag or cut and sew. And just 2 weeks ago, someone who bought one of our jackets 11 years ago, one of our coats 11 years ago, sent us a card saying, I didn't believe that I was going to have this coat for as long as you said when I first bought it. But here I am over 10 years later, and it is the only coat that I have purchased in the last 10 years.
And honestly, Dr. Broat, yeah. If you're like me, and if that other person is like us, our favorite coat is the oldest coat. Our favorite pair of boots are the ones our feet have broken in ourselves. Our favorite pair of jeans are the ones that match us completely because they've become a part of us. We've worn them so often. At least that's the way I see it. I always bristle at new clothes because they're not mine yet.
Well, and they don't have the memory of all that you've done on your journey.
Yes.
And I think that's the beautiful thing about buying clothes that can last over time, is that literally your story becomes etched, faded into your clothing. Mm. Every scuff on a boot, it's from something, and it's part of your story. And it's like, you know, I have the original Gnu coat, and I just showed it to one of our main partners is the Pendleton Woolen Mill here in Oregon. And I was up talking to their new CEO and their vice president and the folks. And I brought in the very first Gnu coat we ever made, like the piece that was a serendipitous, happy accident that like launched us. And I can see wear and scuffs and tear on there from, it's like a piece that conjures up memories of being out on the edge of the earth in the Bering Sea, where I wore that coat in the Aleutian Islands, walking the streets of Prague, like things that, you know, just like I've worn that coat everywhere.
Right. And it's imprinted with you, and it's become part of you. And, you know, Gnu has this slogan, wear with spirit. And Dr. Broat, you sort of are alluding to it, but what does that mean for Gnu clothing?
I think that, like, for us, it's like be who you are in the clothing that becomes part of you. And it's more than just like some like catchy tagline or something, but like we really want you to be able to wear these things over time.
Yeah.
And for them to represent you and to become completely unique. It's like when you buy a pair of our jeans, on day one, they're one of 200, because we do very small batches at a time. But on day 30, they're one of one already, because they started to get creases that no one else will put in, and they started to get wear. They started, you know, like if you're a dad of a newborn, all of a sudden the knees start getting worn first. Or whether you're someone who likes to work on trucks or on a farm, like the top of the thighs get worn. If you're someone who rides those great motorcycles that are made in Milwaukee, your other areas get worn, right? And it's just a beautiful thing, because it goes from a one of 200 to a one of one in a very short amount of time, and it only gets better with time and with the radical idea of repairing them. Rather than discarding, be radical and repair them so that it doesn't take more cotton, doesn't take more, you know, water, doesn't take more depletion from the soil. Like, it's just amazing. And it becomes more beautiful, in my opinion, over time.
Dr. Eric Broad, our guest, co-founder of GNU Clothing Company, also Associate Dean of Native Health at Oregon Health and Science University. And you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us, talk@WPR.org. Evidently, Russell Moccasin's in Berlin, not New Berlin.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. All right. We got that correction out there. So you mentioned your jeans, and I'm curious about the design process, the manufacturing, and eliminating exploitation in the entire system and how you go about that conscientiously, Dr. Broad.
So number one, in fashion, if you're small, even if you're a very large company, it's very difficult to ensure that your entire supply chain is completely watertight with all of those issues, mm-hmm. number one. It's very difficult. But if you are intentional about it, it takes a lot more time. And these are questions going back to as far as where was the cotton grown? And for making a pair of jeans, it begins with us identifying where the cotton actually comes from. And people are like, well, why is that important? Is it like a tomato that's grown someplace really close to your house and tastes better? It's not because of that. It's actually more nefarious. It's because about a fifth of the cotton is tied to enslavement. And that is just really difficult.
So don't
think about it.
Even sourcing your raw material can be a challenge. So just to get off the ground.
Yep. You have to. So, like, one thing that we do is we make sure that 0%, none of our cotton, absolutely none of it, comes from a certain region in the world where people are forced to do the planting, cultivating, picking, and processing of that cotton.
And that's not easy.
And that is a fact.
Oh.
Yeah. And it is not easy. But the thing is that the challenge is that most people, I don't think they really care. or it's so far out of their minds, or it's so far out of their mind that what matters is you can get a shirt for 99 cents or $1.99. Let me tell you, the cost of $1.99 or a 99-cent shirt is profound. And it's usually because it's added up in the amount of water that was used, the kind of pesticides and like the soils that were killed doing it. Maybe the people who are being exploited to be able to produce, cultivate, harvest the cotton. Maybe the working conditions aren't that great in putting it together and then shipping it around the world. You know, I mean, the difference between shipping stuff via like rail and boat as far as BTUs is way, way less than it is to ship things via air or truck even.
Do you find it a challenge to manufacture in the United States, or is that something that's been easier for GNU?
It's both.
Okay.
And it's like, what do you mean by that? Well, it's both. So on one aspect, because of our careers and our day jobs, it is easier for us to manufacture in the United States because we can go and visit people. It is easier for me to drive to Washougal, Washington, or Pendleton, Oregon, to go visit where fabrics are made than it is for me to fly to India.
Right.
It's just easier. So, I mean, there's certain parts that are easier like that. It is easier for me to fly down to L.A. or to drive or ride my bike to a place in Portland where we have things made than it is to fly to, like, North Java.
So what's the challenge then?
The challenge is that the manufacturing of clothing in the United States has not been invested in for decades. In fact, it's basically a mass divestment. So I think it's something, I don't know if you've got the most recent stats on this, but it's like less than 3% of all clothes that people purchase and wear in the United States are made here. and it didn't used to be that way. As recently as like 1980, it was very, very, very different.
Dr. Eric,
and now, yeah.
I just want to reintroduce you and get some of our questions and emails on the air here, Eric.
Sure.
Dr. Eric Broad, co-founder of GNU Clothing Company.
Yeah.
Let's go to Nina in Menasha next at 1-800-642-1234.
Nice.
Nina, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call. First of all, you had mentioned that I just want to make a comment on, you know, people don't care. And I think it's all about education. I recently just watched a PBS show. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but
you are.
I think it's called Human Footprint. Something along that line. I mean, I'm in my car. I sure. parked because I wanted to. But the photographs, the screenshots I took, of that episode were dumbfounding. And I think maybe in social sciences in our schools or something, we can start educating or have just a little bit on, you know, I don't know how that works, but. Because I'm old, I'm like 50.
No, I get it. I'm old like 52, Nina. And it was called Human Footprint on PBS. And you can find it at pbs.org/show/Human Footprint for more. But it goes to show that we're not necessarily thinking about this. But do you see, Dr. Brote, do you see a difference between generations in their understanding of the impact of their clothing?
You know, it's, again, yes and no. Huh. So it's like you have people that when they're surveyed say that, you know, over 90% of people want to buy clothing that's made in America or made locally or made with the best materials possible. But then in practice, what happens is most everybody makes their decisions on price.
Yeah. Well, here's,
and I think that's just where it, like, sales and prices and whatever. And so it's like, in theory and in people's minds and hearts, they want to do one thing, but in practice, it's we've been trained to do another.
Here's an email from Veronica who asks, "What about folks who can't afford to spend the money for high prices, but looking for long-lasting clothes or footwear to wear?"
You brought this up earlier, and we sell clothing.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you want to make the least impact on the world and buy the toughest clothes that you can for the most affordable price, do you know where you get them? Where do you get them?
I would go Farm and Fleet.
No, you go to a thrift store because these are garments that have already been around for 10, 15, 20 years. They're strong enough already.
Are you
they
ready?
They lasted over time.
Dr. Brote, I actually have an email of a poem here for you from Michael. Michael, thank you for the poetry. "When you buy something new, more greenhouse gases you do spew. So save a dime and skip the prime. It's thrift store time."
Michael. Yeah, it is. And like, if you want to, literally, and so the person's name is Michael?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And people are like, "Are you crazy? You sell clothes." And no, I'm not crazy. If you cannot, if you want to do something that is about the earth first and your human footprint on the earth, don't buy a single new pair of anything if you can help it. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, because you are the co-founder of a clothing company.
It is. It's crazy. But I would buy underwear and socks.
Wow.
And everything else. If I want to have the least amount of footprint, human footprint, that is how you do it. You reuse, you recycle, you repair.
Yeah.
I think of those boots, right? Like, what if I was like burning through like, you know, 2-3 pairs of shoes?
And some people do.
A year.
Yeah.
Oh, some people burn through more, especially if you like do running and walking, and people have shoes for rainy days and people have shoes for sunny days and. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do have a question about denim, though,
sure.
Because I believe this has been a debate that's gone back and forth, and I've heard different stories with people putting their blue jeans in the freezer or never putting them in the wash. How do you care for your jeans, Dr. Brote?
I love them.
Well, that's easy.
So the thing is like, I think denim is one of the most romantic fabrics in the world.
Huh.
And there's nothing like it because of the way it's dyed, and because of the way that the bonding of the indigo to the cotton works, like it's like a living, breathing thing. It's like, have you looked through an old window before that's like 100 years old?
Oh yeah.
And it's kind of
warped.
It's a little warped, and it's like it's thicker on the bottom than it is on the top because it's actually still fluid at some level. That's kind of like the dye on jeans.
Wow.
And so what I do, just like with any garment of clothing, so this goes back to Michael too. So if I do buy new clothing, I wash them as little as possible. And I'm also not obsessive and I don't want to stink. Okay.
So right.
It's like what I do with my jeans is I wear them all the time. I even wear jeans to the office here, and I hang them up at the end of the day. I don't fold them and put them in the freezer. I don't do those kind of things. when it is time to wash my jeans, I soak them in cold water with a scant amount of detergent and a scant amount of a substance called borax.
Yep.
And when I say scant, I'm talking like less than a teaspoon.
Wow.
And I let them soak, and then I let them line dry. And so if you don't want to eliminate your clothes as fast, hand washing and line drying. I mean, just look at the lint piles that come out of the dryer when you're done. It's more convenient to do that, but it's like so what I do is I hand wash, I line dry, and if I do ever wash my jeans in the washing machine, I pull them inside out.
Okay.
I wash them on cold with scant detergent, and I turn off the spin cycle. So I use like real indigo dyed jeans. And so because it's natural and fluid, if you don't turn off the spin cycle, you'll get little polka dotting on them, because in the spin cycle, it pulls the indigo dye to the little holes where the water exits the drum while it's spinning. And so what I do is I still line dry them. And I turn off the spin cycle if I'm washing them in the washing machine.
That is good to know, and I've heard any number of ways of people trying to keep their blue jeans for as long as possible because it becomes a part of them. Dr. Brote, with the time we have left with your GNU clothing company, would you tell us a little bit about the GNU Impact Fund?
So the GNU Impact Fund, we identify or work with an entity that we feel is making a big difference. So in the past, this has looked like, because we're small, right? We're not like a Fortune 500 company. We're not like a top 100 company, right? Like, we are a small business. And so what we've done is we identify a group or organization or foundation or someone to work with around an issue. And I think the most significant of this has been what we did with the Warm Springs Nation here in Oregon, where we were approached by a concrete company. They're called Collective Concrete, and then a skate shop called Tactics, who had a pro skater or a sponsored skater who was from the Warm Springs Nation and from the community there, and their skate park had gotten old.
Mm-hmm.
And next thing you know, like, we came up with some resources to help build a new skate park. But what happened is we got people really excited about it. And so we got a Grammy Award-winning band, Portugal the Man, became involved. Tony Hawk, he's a pro skater who has the Tony Hawk Foundation, and it's called the Skate Park Project, got involved. The Roundhouse Foundation in Central Oregon, that is derivative of the Columbia Sportswear family, they got involved. And we got everybody together, and the sum was much greater than our parts, and it was awesome. That's the GNU Impact Fund. So we've been able to leverage a small amount of funding that we generate from sales every year into these larger, bigger projects that have impact. And then the other thing that we have been supporting is the Northwest Native American Center of Excellence here at the medical school, where every student that they get into this one program called the YEAST Post-Bac Pathway, every student that they get in generates a $1 million a year return on investment. It's actually for every dollar we spend, it generates just under $1,000.
Wow.
For a community, in a community, because of the impact of having a physician go and work in a rural or tribal area in rural Oregon.
I mean, sure.
it's profound, where it's like, yeah, I'll give you a dollar if it generates $1,000 for a tribal community.
And the bigger
and that's
picture,
an easy lift for us.
Yeah, and the bigger picture, isn't that what we're talking about with slow fashion? Is it's an investment up front for saving money in the long run, as opposed to buying a $50 pair of shoes every 6 months. You buy a $300 pair of boots that lasts 15 years, and you tell me who the economically savvy person is here.
Yep, exactly. And I think over time, especially the Russell Moccasin boot, I remember purchasing, I think those boots cost me north of $500. And at the time, it was the most I'd ever spent on a pair of shoes ever. And literally, here I am, 13 years later, they're the most comfortable. I can't hardly buy another pair of boots because they have formed to my foot.
They are your boots.
I still remember the gentleman that measured my foot. I believe his name was Ralph Farabricius, and he had been doing this for like 63 or 64 years.
Wow.
And the stories he told me as I stood upon this little, it was like a little wooden box that he measured my feet and took these 13 different measurements on. And then after I got down, he like showed me pictures of like presidents and senators and, you know, like thought leaders and innovators that had stood on that exact same box.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, oh, man.
Yeah. Like, on the shoulders of giants. Like, Dr. Eric Brill, we are out of time, but I want to thank you for sharing your work and giving us an alternative to fast fashion and alternative to exploitation. GNU Clothing Company, and we've got a link on our website at WPR.org/Larry where you can find more about this clothing company. And Derek, Dr. Brill, thanks again for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate all you guys are doing back there in the great state of Wisconsin.
You bet. And when we continue, we'll take a look at the fashion trends this fall, and regardless of your age or fashion sense, how you can fit into them or how you can make them fit into your own personal fashion. With styling consultant Stephanie Taylor joining us next, I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you are listening to The Larry Mueller Show.